The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
It's Victor Dandridge, the hardest working man in comics, and you are listening to PVB Cast with John Orlando. Guys, I'm telling y'all it's the best thing on the entire interweb. Listen long, listen strong. John, it's all you, man.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your busy yet humble host, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 196. Now, before I get into talking a little bit about the guest that's going to be joining me here on this episode of the PVD Cast, I would like to talk about why I just said that I'm busy. I talked a little bit about it on the mini episode last week that yours truly has a few new projects to work on. And as a matter of fact, I'd like to talk a little more in-depth about one of those projects, but I'm still going to leave a little bit of mystery behind it. Because this past weekend, I sat down with Brian Phillips, the man that brings you all the music in the morning while you're listening to CD 1025 FM here in Columbus, Ohio. He is my partner in a little project called Behind the Puck, which is a podcast that's going to be affiliated with 11-1 Productions, and of course the movie that they are producing called The Third Period. Now, that's all I'm going to say right now. I thoroughly enjoyed working with Brian this past Saturday. I think that the episode turned out really, really well. Still tweaking a few things, trying to trim it down just a little bit more, but it will be released here real soon. So just keep your ears out here on the PVD Cast. I'll let you know when it drops, and always keep your eyes open on Facebook or Twitter, as, you know, I'll let you know when things are coming, whether it's that project or even a couple others that I'm still not quite crossed all the T's and dotted all the I's on those other projects, but I will be doing that real soon, so there's plenty of news to talk about with yours truly and podcasting in general. So let's talk about my guest for this episode of the PVD Cast. I'm sitting down with the man that calls himself cartoonist extraordinaire, Mr. Ben Wright Uman. Ben is the creator of Cospain, which is a webcomic that focuses on convention life, sometimes more geared towards the cosplay convention life, but nonetheless, convention life in general. And if you don't know what we're talking about there, I mean, it's kind of hard to describe unless you've been to a comic book convention, a cosplay convention, an anime convention, or whatever convention you've kind of learn how you function within the realm of that situation. And I've had the experience to do so, helping out Brian Lau at Wizard World and Space and a few other conventions. So I get it and I understand it. And honestly, I don't think you really have to experience the con life to really, you know, relate to some of the situations that these characters are put in. Ben is also the creator of The Letters of the Devil, which is a mystery web comic that was recently put into a book and print format. So we're going to talk all about that as well as some other things. So it's going to be a very enlightening conversation. Although I will state this, at times you may hear a little bit of a hum in the background. We were at the local library and they had the AC on and I tried to clean it up as best as I could. But I do apologize if some of you are listening and going, God, that's annoying. I apologize. I tried to do the very best that I could with that small little hiccup there. One other thing real quick I would like to mention, as I kind of almost forgot about it. One of the topics we discuss is, of course, cosplaying, because Ben has a background in it. And I don't know if we actually got the web address correct for something called the Cosplayer Survival Support Network. It is an organization that helps individuals that feel like they have been sexually harassed at a con, and also try to help cons eliminate that type of behavior. So I'm going to give the web address here real quick. It's cosplayer-ssn.org, and that is CSSN's website. Ben's pretty passionate about this because he has friends and he's done it himself. And he realizes that it's something that really has no place in any type of convention, whether you're talking about a cosplay convention or a comic book convention or an anime convention or any convention for that matter. So with that being said, let me just remind you real quickly that today's episode is brought to you by World's Greatest Comics. They're located at 5992 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. They have tons of comics, graphic novels, toys, comic book supplies, and various collectibles. So stop on over to the store and say hi to the fine folks over there, or check them out online at wgcomics.com, or you can also find them now on Facebook, facebook.com/wgcomics. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break, and on the other side of the break, I'm back talking to Ben Wright Human about all of his various projects. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm sitting down here with Ben Wright Human. Ben, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good. Thank you for having me.
You're quite welcome, man. You know, we're meeting up here at the local library to talk a little bit about your projects. So let's start off with Cospaint, which is your webcomic that you do that focuses on the cosplay community.
That's right. I've been doing it for almost 2 years now. I actually just completed the 100th strip, which was kind of a big deal. I didn't know I was going to be able to have that many jokes, but it's going strong. Hope to keep it going.
I was going to ask, do you have kind of an idea of when it's going to end, or you're just kind of going with it, man?
I'm going until I run out of jokes.
Okay.
That's the big one, because as long as people are enjoying it, I want to keep making it.
Okay.
This is the one series I've gotten the most positive feedback on. Because I normally like to, I do fiction almost exclusively.
Mm-hmm.
I've done a lot of horror. I work on mystery. I've done all kinds of stuff. And comedy is the scariest thing I've had to write. But it's been amazing because I'll go to cons and people will see one of the strips. Because I often will post them as prints, not just trying to sell the books.
Okay.
And people will come up to me and say, that's me. And that feels really good. Like, I never expected that to happen.
Yeah. I mean, let's back up for a minute, but I want to come back to that because I think that there's even, I'm not in the cosplay community, but there's still things that I recognize and go, that I've seen at a con or has happened to me or whatnot. But let's go back a little bit. It is, of course, Cospaint is based on some of the things that you've witnessed or some of the things that have happened to you at various different conventions, correct?
That's right. A lot of it is also based on my friends. I haven't had a lot of time to cosplay over the last few years, mainly because I'm doing comics, and that takes up a lot of time. But I have a lot of friends who are really hardcore with it.
Mm-hmm.
I started cosplaying in 2008, and I have friends that have kept doing it since 2008. One of the main ones is my friend Trixie, who lives in town and is the basis for a lot of the jokes. I based a couple of the characters specifically on her just because a lot of crazy stuff happens to happens around her, and I happen to be there for it. But yeah, a lot of it's based on what I've seen, experienced, or heard about at cons. You mentioned it. There's stuff being you can connect to even if you're not a cosplayer.
Mm-hmm.
It's because a lot of it is more about the majority of the jokes are about cosplay, but it's also about the con life.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're into comics, you probably know the con life on some level.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
You may have been to indie cons. Before the recording, we were talking a little bit about space.
Right.
Where you're not going to see a lot of cosplayers, but I have jokes based on that too.
Yeah. So real quickly, since you touched based on it, that you haven't been cosplaying, you have, as you mentioned, you did it for a while. So what was your favorite cosplay character that you did?
Honestly, probably the first one I did. I was really proud of that costume. It was Godot from the Phoenix Wright games.
Okay.
And the main reason I loved it, Godot has this big metal visor that I built out of an aluminum drain pipe and a translucent red folder.
Really?
Yeah. And later versions of it would light up, too. It was really, really cool. But I was always proud of that thing.
Okay.
And it's, you know, your first cosplay is always special, too, even when parts of it are janky.
Okay.
But I was always really happy with that.
All right.
Yeah, more recently, I've cosplayed, a couple years ago, I cosplayed Galcian from, no, it was this past year, actually. I was Galcian from Skies of Arcadia. I've cosplayed Rorschach. I've cosplayed just a handful of characters. And whenever I get the opportunity, I've been looking at other costumes to do. I've just been very busy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we're going to talk. You've got a lot of different web comics and comics out there. You know what? I'm going to go here with some of my favorites as I kind of went through cosplaying and ones that I could certainly relate to. The first one that I got a chuckle out of, the one that was labeled, I didn't write it down, but it was number 24. It was the one with the Christmas card.
That yes. Was that, that was just called Merry Christmas 2016, I think. Yeah.
I chuckled at that one because for me personally, I actually bought a set of, they weren't more along the lines of like lewd cosplay, but they were pinup art from like the 1950s. Right. That had done a series, and artists had done like four of them, and I sent one to my buddy, and he sent back in his Christmas card, "Thanks for the Christmas card. I've never gotten an erection from one before." And so that one clicked with me.
That one was also based on Trixie.
Really?
She has a Patreon for her cosplay, and also she does three big things. For con, she does cosplay. She organizes formal dances at a lot of anime cons. And she has an organization called the Cosplayer Survivor Support Network. Which is for cosplayers who've dealt with harassment at cons and helping cons develop better policies for dealing with that kind of thing. And she has a Patreon to support all that. And one of the base Patreon tiers is she'll send out regular cosplay postcards. And her she does a lot of risque cosplay. Just that's a lot of the characters that she does. So her Christmas card or holiday card was not as crazy as the one I drew. By far, but it was risque. It's funny because my mom's one of her patrons, and so she got this in the mail. And she was like, "You should see what I got from Trixie." I was like, "Yeah, yeah, that's going to be a comic."
So I like that one. Number 81 I thought was absolutely hilarious and resonated with me. Is the one where the young lady didn't recognize who texted her because they were using their real name instead of "I'm this character from whatever convention." And to me, I'll just explain real quick, coming from the pro wrestling background that I, you know, that I have, there's so many guys, you don't call them by their real names, you call them by their character's name. You know what I mean? Like, "Oh, that's Hot Commodity." You know, I mean, like, that's how you know them. That's just how you do. So for me, that clearly, that one in 92 is another one that had a pro wrestling kind of connection to me. The one in 92, or the one that's number 92, excuse me, is the one with the unclaimed table. And the guy just pops the table out of his suitcase. And I've seen that lots of times, you know. Somebody doesn't show up. "Hey, kid, do you got your gear?" Some young guy goes out and gets his bag, and he has his tights and his boots, and he's ready to go. So I think those two, on a different level, connected with me.
The both of those are based on things that happened after I moved to Columbus. The first one, it came up because I used to go to some of the regular cons in Ohio because I went to Kenyon College. And Trixie did too. And she was still in college while I was out here, so I'd go visit her to go to the cosplay convention, mainly Ohio Con. And I met a couple of the cosplayers out here, but I'm really bad about keeping in touch with people. And when I moved back out here, I went to OhioCon again. I hadn't for a long time. I think since 2011. Trixie is one of those extroverts who knows everybody. So she started talking to a cosplayer, and then he looked at me, got all excited, and walked up and hugged me. And I had no idea who it was at first. And it was great because after he left, I knew I was supposed to know who it was. And I leaned into Trixie and I was like, who was that? And he was like, "Oh yeah, he played, he was Edgeworth back when we did Phoenix Wright stuff." I'm like, "Oh, I remember him now." So that exact thing happened. With the other one, that's also a reference to OhioCon. This past year, OhioCon is a policy that I really like. I'd like to see more cons do it.
Now, is that in Sandusky?
No, it's at the Greater Columbus Convention Center.
What am I thinking of? I'm thinking of another.
Sandusky, that's Colossal Con.
Thank you. I had those two mixed up. Sorry. Go ahead.
But with Ohio Con, they have a policy where check-in is at noon or 1 o'clock, something like that, on Friday. And if you have not arrived and you haven't told anybody why you're there, you basically forfeit your table. But then anyone who's there and ready to go can purchase the table. So they're technically double selling their tables, but they're going to have a blank spot otherwise. It's fine.
Right.
And if you didn't reach out to them or anything like that, you know, you should have.
Sure.
So I showed up and was waiting in line. I was eighth in line, I think, and they ended up having seven tables. So I missed out. But I left them a card saying, hey, I'm a local. Mm-hmm. If a table opens up or anything happens, here's my contact information. And on Saturday, they contacted me saying, someone sold out. You want a table for Sunday? Sure. Why not? I'll bring my stuff in.
Hey, man, look, all of these, including the last one, five-finger discount.
Yeah.
All of these are great, great pieces of advice for anybody out there that has never done a convention, whether it's a cosplay convention or anime convention or a comic book convention. That five-finger discount, that's really good advice because, you know, I've been at a table where you let them thumb through the book and not realizing that they could just take off with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or misunderstand and take off with it.
That one was funny. That was that same OhioCon where I had the one-day table.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was doing that and trying to pull people in. And I pulled in. I feel a little bad in case the guy hears this because I don't want him to feel bad.
Okay.
But there was... I had just introduced a new cosplay mini collection. I have these tiny collections that are like that big, designed for cosplayer pockets. I shouldn't have done a hand gesture on a podcast.
That's okay.
I do it all
the time.
Each page is about the one-sixth of a sheet of regular letter paper.
Okay.
I just released one, and it's called Never Skip Neck Day, and it's a joke about giant wigs. And so whenever I saw someone with a big wig, I was trying to call him over and get him to the table. And I called this guy over. I put the book in his hand, just like, hey, this seems like it applies directly to you. And I later learned you never put something in somebody's hand. You let them pick it up.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you put it in their hand, they think you're giving it to them for free.
Mm-hmm.
So this guy ended up walking off this comic, and I was too awkward to go, oh, you need to... So,
good advice. It's good advice.
I actually found this out because I belong to a group on Facebook for Artist Alley people. And I said, hey, this happened to me. Like, what can I do to avoid this in the future? And I probably received 20 responses like, what are you thinking putting it in somebody's hand?
There you go.
So that's how I knew I made a mistake.
There you go. Let's talk real quickly about unwritten rules when it comes to cosplay.
Unwritten rules. Well, they need to be written. That's part of the problem. One of the big ones is if you're going to take a cosplayer's photo, ask permission. Don't take candids.
Okay.
Because there are so many people taking inappropriate photos without permission that you don't want to be mistaken for one of those people.
Okay.
Another big one, there's a lot of talk about, this is not exactly a cosplayer rule. There's been a lot of talk about cosplay is not consent, which is a big thing that's been happening at cons.
Mm-hmm.
And while there's good in that attitude, it's important to note that you don't just have to be in cosplay to be... It doesn't just apply to cosplayers.
Sure, yeah.
Consent is important for everybody at that con because there are people who get harassed outside of cosplay.
Right.
And a lot of con policies don't really cover that well. A lot of cons are getting better about this stuff.
Well, that's good. That's good.
But it is still... It's an uphill battle.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned Trixie. If anyone wants to check out resources for this, her website, I believe, I'm sorry if I get this wrong, is TRICKSSI.com. She also has one specifically for the Cosplayer Survivor Support Network, which is cosplayer-ssn.org. I'm pretty sure I got both of those right. And if not, you'll just edit it in post.
Exactly. We'll make sure that information gets out, man.
But yeah, it's a good resource and chilling over.
Well, let's talk about The Letters of the Devil, which is another web comic that recently just got put into print format, into a book format.
Recently being, I guess 2018 is when I really started sending, when I sent them out.
Mm-hmm.
But that was my final project at the Center for Cartoon Studies.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the Center for Cartoon Studies, are you familiar with it?
I'm familiar a little bit with it, fill in the listeners at home, yeah.
It is a program in Vermont that it offers a few things, but the big thing is it offers a master's in fine arts in sequential art. It's a graduate degree in comics. And I went there 2014 to 2016. It's a fantastic program. While I was there, I came up with this idea. And I've also always liked mystery comics. They're kind of rare in the U.S. Not a lot of people do mystery comics for some reason. There's, like, the big joke whenever I say that is, well, there's Detective Comics, but how many of those are really mysteries?
True, very true, yeah.
Meanwhile, in Japan, they're incredibly popular. Hmm. There's Case Closed, the Kindaichi Case Files. The Ace Attorney Investigations manga is actually really good. And a lot of these run for 50, 60 issues. Hmm. Like, or volumes, specifically, not, like, small floppies. It made me realize I want to see more of these that are English native. So I started working on this project. Didn't quite finish it before I graduated, but I finished enough to graduate. Mm-hmm. And then just kept working on it.
Well, can you give us a little summary of what the book's about?
Sure. The basic question being asked is, what would happen if someone exposed your deadliest secret to random strangers? It follows a detective named Cedric Dustin, who receives an anonymous letter accusing this major financial figure in town of fraud, saying she's basically running a Ponzi scheme. And he investigates this letter and finds out that other people have also received anonymous letters. And it's exchanging everybody's secrets, and in the end, everything is just collapsing because of this.
It's got a very Agatha Christie kind of feel to it.
Yeah.
Is it fair to say that was an inspiration?
Absolutely. I'm a big fan of Agatha Christie. I've been working through a lot of the Poirot series. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that really made this book click for me was And Then There Were None, mm-hmm. which is the classic whodunit. It's funny because when I was originally putting this idea together, I thought it was going to be a bunch of EC comic style vignettes. That's originally what I planned.
Okay.
So they weren't all going to be, wasn't going to be one cohesive mystery. It was just going to be a bunch of short stories where someone receives a letter and it causes everything to go wrong.
Gotcha.
Three things that made me change that. Reading And Then There Were None, playing one of the Zero Escape games. I think it was Virtue's Last Reward, which is an escape room mystery series, which is very, very good if you like mysteries. And reading The Count of Monte Cristo.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Those three made me stop and think, like, wait a minute, this could work as one story if I make it a whodunit and have this one character be the mysterious figure sending the letters.
Huh. Okay.
So that ended up completely changing how I did it.
Well, can I ask a question about the artwork? From what I saw here, it seems that there's only three colors used.
That's correct.
There's red, there's the already white, which is the background of the paper, and then black inks.
Yeah.
So why did you go that route?
I really like single color, which is what that's technically called.
Okay.
I've started doing that with horror comics, mm-hmm. and I just really liked it. About half my comics have that. Letters has it. I did it for a horror comic called Nightmare, horror comic called The Light Outside the Window, Man in Green. I just like doing that. It's a really quick, easy way to do effective color. Mm-hmm. And I was also a fan of Sin City growing up, so that probably helped.
Okay. I was going to ask that. That was on the list. Is was that an inspiration? Was Sin City?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I watched the movies when they came out in college and then later read the comics. Mm-hmm. And they definitely had an impact on me.
Sure.
I always liked that stark visual style.
Yeah.
And when I was making letters, the biggest problem I had with all that was I did it in the most convoluted way possible.
Meaning?
So I did all the penciling on the computer. Mm-hmm. I would print it out twice. And on one of them, I'd ink the characters and certain important objects and everything. And on the other one, I'd use pencils to do that grayscaling. Then I'd digitally put them on top of each other. And then I'd take parts of it and make it red and parts of it that weren't. And it was so much work.
I was just gonna ask. It seemed like double the work.
It was a lot of work.
Okay.
I wasn't working full digital yet.
Okay.
Because I'm still technically not working full digital, but I was doing some stuff digitally, some stuff traditionally, mm-hmm. and wasn't quite ready to make a larger jump.
Okay.
I'm working on the sequel now, and I'm at least doing the inks digitally, and I'm still gonna do the pencil thing for the shading, but it's cutting down on my work dramatically. Just having one thing I'm gonna have to print out and then draw and scan. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, I'm going to switch gears for a minute.
Yeah.
Because one of the things we talked off air a little bit about, mm-hmm. that I have said, you know, I don't know of too many comic creators that do this. You, I can think of another one.
Mm-hmm.
But you have a Twitch channel.
Yes.
So why did you decide that you were going to embrace that technology and kind of go out on the airwaves? And also, too, what can a viewer expect to see on your Twitch channel?
Well, part of the reason I did it is I watch a lot of Let's Plays. I like watching people playing video games or running a Dungeons & Dragons game and things like that. So I was familiar with the streaming technology and with how a lot of that works. And I decided, I'd heard about a few people who do that for drawing. They don't usually use Twitch. They use, it's like Picard or something like that. I'd have to look it up. But
The other one that I know is Adam Fields does it. I believe he uses Facebook Live, which is a very similar technology to Twitch, a little bit different. But
I've also considered doing it through Patreon or through YouTube directly. For now, I'm keeping it to Twitch because I've gotten a little used to Twitch, but I'm probably going to experiment with that in the future.
But
I basically just work on a cost pain strip, talk about my process, talk about whatever else is going on. Usually takes... What I generally do is split it into two videos. I'll do one on Friday and one on Sunday.
Okay.
And on Friday, I'll do the pencils and the inking, and then I'll do all the coloring on Sunday.
Okay. Are they about what time limit was?
That's part of the reason I split it up, because it can vary.
Okay.
The very first stream I did both, and it took about an hour and a half. On most subsequent streams, it's taken an hour and a half for each of those sections, because it really varies based on the comments.
Sure, right, yeah.
Then about a week later, usually, we'll post the replays on YouTube. I've started breaking those up also, so that they're only about 30 to 45 minute videos.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, let's hear about some of the info as to where folks can find you on Twitch.
All right. On Twitch, I'm under the name BWH Comics. I'm that for pretty much everything.
Okay.
You know, consistent branding. You got to do
it.
That's
right.
But yeah, so it's just twitch.tv/BWH Comics.
Okay.
I'm also BWH Comics on YouTube for the replays.
Okay.
As far as I can tell, there's no good way to go directly there. Mm-hmm. You just have to search for it.
Okay.
But I mean, it's a good way to find everything else I'm doing.
There you go. Well, let's talk a little bit about the writing process, because you mentioned that that's one of the things viewers can see on Twitch. So how do you go about mapping out your comics?
It generally varies. With the Letters of the Devil, I write in screenplay format, because I went to school and Kenyon double majored English and drama, because they didn't have a film department yet, and that's what I wanted to do. And I learned screenwriting there. So that's just how I script out my comics. With cost paint, it's way simpler. I write panel one, dialogue, panel two, dialogue, panel three, dialogue, panel four, dialogue, and that's it. And it usually will change from that.
Okay.
It just gives me the basic framework so I can make a thumbnail and start from there.
Okay.
Generally, the final writing happens whenever I'm thumbnailing.
Okay.
Because I'll change things on the fly. I'll be like, okay, this worked when I wrote it, but reading it out loud, it doesn't sound right. So we'll fix it. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. That's the best rule of thumb is reading things out loud to see if it sounds correct. I do it all the time for the descriptions for these episodes. I read it out loud and go, yeah, that doesn't sound right. So
I had a crazy one with this sequel to The Letters of the Devil.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do tell.
Well, I was keeping myself on a pretty tight deadline. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I've been posting on my regular newsletter and for my patrons is progress updates and when the deadlines are expected to be.
Mm-hmm.
And around November, I realized that I had some serious writing problems, and I had to put the whole thing on hold until I fixed them, which meant I was already in the pencil stages. It's really hard to go back, but it had to happen. So I just put the entire project on hold, went back, and tried to figure out how you restart writing when you're already past that
point. And I imagine that was a heck of a challenge.
It was tough, but I did a lot of brainstorming and eventually got it to work. I left it in the car, but I actually have the notebook that I used to do all that. I went back home for a while to Richmond because...
Yes, Richmond, Virginia.
Richmond, Virginia. Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
Because actually my mom had to have knee surgery and I'm a freelancer. I can travel. So
sure.
I came back and helped and I found one of those old like marble notebooks that just was empty and it just happened to be in my room. I took that and a red pen and just started writing notes.
Okay.
And
you hammered it out, right?
I hammered it out, yeah. Neil Gaiman has a great quote. He was talking about writing American Gods, and he said that he talked to another author, and said, I think I finally understand how to write a novel. And he said, no, you understand how to write the novel you wrote. I felt that so much on this sequel.
Yeah. So is the sequel done?
I'm working on it now.
You're working on it now.
Okay. I just got to the inking stage.
Okay.
And I'm shooting to... My goal is to have it done beginning of December.
Okay.
At which point the Kickstarter will come out.
So what's your opinion on Kickstarters? Because I have found that creators either love them or hate them. There's no middle ground.
I've done one Kickstarter so far, and it's been very good to me.
Okay. So you're on the yay side of things,
yes,
if you will.
Okay. Kickstarter makes self-publishing possible.
Sure.
For a lot of things, it's really not. I kind of use it as a pre-order system more than anything.
Okay.
I kept the amount low when I did the first letters book. And the whole idea was, I'll make the total so I'll get the money.
Mm-hmm.
And then it'll pay for the books to get made.
Mm-hmm.
And the funny thing is, I made more money than I thought. Okay. I was going to.
So that's a good problem to have. Yeah.
Yeah. I put down $1,000 and as the goal, and I had 30 days to do it. And I hit $1,000 in 7 days.
Okay.
And by the end, I'd made about $1,500. So...
Okay. Well, that's excellent.
It's great. One of the other things I noticed that was very interesting was a very big portion of those people who backed me,
mm-hmm,
found me through Kickstarter.
Okay.
And that's a big deal. Because getting the word out is very hard on this stuff. This is actually a platform that helps people find you. Like Patreon, it's, mm-hmm, got a lot of benefits. One of the big problems is it's impossible to find anybody on Patreon. You have to find them elsewhere.
Okay.
Especially because, I mean, a lot of my work is violent or has things that are inappropriate for small kids.
Mm-hmm.
So I marked my Patreon not safe for work. Why wouldn't I?
That's right. Yeah, yeah, right. Exactly. But then that limits who can find you.
Yeah.
How.
You cannot, even if you are flagged as being willing to look at not safe for work, mm-hmm, material, you cannot search for not safe for work people through Patreon. You have to go directly to their link.
Oh.
And I think it's a mistake, but it's their platform. You know, sure, what I mean?
Yeah, right. No, I got you 100%.
And, yeah, and I imagine most people aren't going through Patreon looking for people.
Right.
They're probably finding those people through those people's websites.
Right. Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about another website, gumroad.com, because you have a lot of your mini comics and your whatnot on that particular site. Ones like Phantom, The Adventures of The Commuter, and eventually a few other ones. So if you were going to tell the listeners right now that they had to buy one particular mini comic from Gumroad, what one would it be?
Ooh, that's an interesting question.
It's like asking a father, one's your favorite kid, right?
Yeah, it's actually not tricky because of that. It's funny because I don't really use the Gumroad site that much anymore.
Okay.
Gumroad is what I used when I was in school, when I was at the Center for Cartoon Studies. Because it was one of the more straightforward digital stores you could use.
Mm-hmm.
And I put digital copies of all my comics up there. Technically, everything on there is you can get for free. It's, mm-hmm, pay what you want. If there's any one work off of that I'd specifically recommend, and a big part of this is you really can't get this anywhere else, it's a project I did called Little Lost.
Okay.
This was... Are you familiar with this?
I looked that one up, and I think that one's very creative, but tell the listeners at home what it is. It's a parody book.
Yes.
It's a parody of what?
It's a parody book, and I did not do it myself. I actually did very little in it, but it was... One of the assignments we have at CCS is called the Silver Age Project. And the idea behind the Silver Age Project is you're broken into a group of about 5 people, and you have 2 weeks to make a comic based on the Silver Age style. And this is to get you used to the idea of the assembly line style of comics that they do, mm-hmm, in the bigs. And just to give you an idea of what it was like back in the day. There are famous stories of artists trying to get a comic ready, like back in the 40s and 50s, just all crashing in one guy's apartment to put everything together. And like, there's a famous story of an inker with drawing board sitting in a guy's bathtub because it's the only room left.
I've heard working
on pages. And they were trying to get us used to that idea. Every year they changed the theme.
Mm-hmm.
Our theme was Harvey Comics, and we were each assigned one comic series. We had Little Dot, which is a story about a little girl who's obsessed with polka dots.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. and we also were told we had to make it educational.
Oh, man.
Yeah. This was kind of a nightmare project for a lot of people in my class because most people, after reading a few Harvey comics, hated Harvey comics. It's true. Like, a lot of my classmates, a lot of Harvey comics are very machined out, kind of not great writing. A little, it's stuff like Richie Rich, Casper the Friendly Ghost.
Yeah.
The one that we liked the most was Little Lotta.
Okay.
And it's a little sad because they're all fat jokes, but she's like the one character they gave a personality in the entire thing.
Yeah.
Besides the Richie Rich butler, who's fantastic. But for Little Lost, I got teamed up with kind of a dream team. Like, I was really lucky with who I ended up with.
Okay.
There was a guy named Casimir Iskander, who has done a lot of stuff for the Nib. I think, I'm not 100% on this, but I think he goes by Casimir Lee when he's publishing.
Okay.
But, like, if you look him up, you'll probably find his stuff. Tilly Walden, who...
That name rings a bell.
She should. She's had, like, 4 or 5 graphic novels published, and one of them won an Eisner, Spinning.
Okay.
You might also know her because she's Ken Epstein's cousin.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That's where the name rings a bell.
That's where the name rings a bell. I thought that might help. Who else? Cooper Whittlesey, mm-hmm. who is one of the craziest writers we had in the class. He wrote the entire script in like 72 hours without sleeping or something like that. Like that, he was that kind of guy. And Anna Selheim, who's also a very strong writer and was sort of a pitch hitter on this one. Like, she was like, we had people who were doing the art, doing the writing, and people who are doing everything else. I was the tech guy.
Okay.
I was the guy putting it in an InDesign file and making the PDF.
Okay.
So I feel like I had the easy job. But most of the people in that group hated doing that stuff. So,
okay. So it was a match made in heaven. What's Little Lost actually about now?
Little Lost.
Sorry to interrupt there, but what is this about?
Little Lost, we decided that the educational thing that we wanted to do was different religions of the world and afterlife. And so it's a story about Little Lost realizing her cat is mortally sick and going around and talking to all these different types of religion. There's like animism, Buddhism, talk about the concept of heaven and hell and things like that. It's a really trippy and funny comic. Like, it's incredibly well done. It's not as heavy as it sounds.
How did you represent these different religions? If I may ask it without giving away too much.
Honestly, it was more trying to do broad categories.
Okay.
Like, I mentioned heaven and hell. It wasn't being kept strictly Christian. It was talking about Islam. It was talking about, I think, Zoroastrianism came up, like stuff like that. And I shouldn't say Buddhism was one of the categories. Reincarnation was one of the categories.
Oh, okay, okay. So it wasn't per se religions in itself, but the theory behind it, like reincarnation and purgatory and stuff like that.
Exactly.
Okay, gotcha.
And it just, like, there are some really messed up jokes in there. Like, not against religion. It just, there's kind of a twisted sense of humor about the whole thing. A lot of gallows humor.
Okay.
The one big creative contribution I had is Harvey Comics often had like 2-page short stories that were pretty bad, that were just prose text.
Okay.
And while we were working on everything, just for the hell of it, I wrote one. And they looked at it and were like, sure, we'll put it in.
What was this story about?
It was all the different characters who'd been used to explain each of these things.
Okay.
Hanging out at a cafe and how awkward it is.
Okay.
Because there actually was an atheism one.
Okay.
And one of the jokes is that guy pretends that no one else exists.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. It was very tongue-in-cheek, very well-written. It's also a project that you basically can't find anywhere except on that Gumroad. So I recommend checking it out.
There you go. But you got lots of other things up there. You mentioned nightmares up there.
Yeah.
The Light Outside the Window.
Yeah.
We mentioned Snakes, Phantom. All those great comics are there. So if you're interested, check them out.
Yeah. And some of those comics have been retired.
Oh, really?
The Adventures of the Commuter, Snakes, and basically my $1 comics got retired because it wasn't worth it to me to sell a $1 comic at a con.
Gotcha.
If you want them, the only other way to get them is to buy my mystery bags that I bring to cons, because that's where they went.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't just throw them away.
Well, let's talk about a couple of cons.
The Incident Under Hill Farm, that's the other one.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. I have that one down. Yeah. I should have helped you out on that one.
As much as I hate to, I'm going to interrupt my conversation with Ben for just one moment to talk to you about World's Greatest Comics. It's the one-stop shop for all your comic book-related needs. They got single issues, graphic novels, toys, comic book supplies, and even collectibles. And if you want to make sure you don't miss a single issue of your favorite comic, sign up for their pull system and you'll even get 20% off all pre-ordered comics. So check them out online at wgcomics.com or find them on Facebook, facebook.com/wgcomics, or better yet, jump on over to the store located at 5992 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio, and let them know that you heard about it from me, John Orlando, on the PVD cast.
Speaking of cons, you were at the Three Rivers Comic Con this
past year.
I have been to that two years. I did not get to make it this year, so how was it?
Better than last year by far.
Okay.
For anyone who's been to it previous years and has not been to it this year, they moved.
Right.
That's the most important thing to know.
That is the one big thing, and they moved in a very short amount of time, if I remember correctly, because the promoters had put out that something happened to the old building.
It was condemned. It was condemned back when it was there last year.
Really?
Last year was my first time doing it.
Okay.
And the venue was awful. Nothing they could have done. That's where it was set up. But they barely had... I didn't trust the water. They didn't have AC. It was sweltering hot. And it was in a mall that was basically being shut down. So it was a little tricky for people to figure out where to go. The thing is, the staff was so cool that I still considered coming back. That's a big thing I'd like to make sure con people know, is that it doesn't matter if someone does well at your con. If you are cool, that really helps. So I basically... One of the big things they did is they fed us. That's so rare.
That is... Yeah.
Yeah. They had real food that they brought in. They brought in, a thing to make hot dogs. I want to say they had meatballs and stuff like that.
Really?
They just keep bringing in more food. And they had so much bottled water. I had to drink, 3 gallons that year because we were sweltering. We would have passed out if that hadn't happened.
Right.
So I was like, if they move, I'll come back. And they moved, so I came back.
Okay. So the new venue is much nicer?
New venue is significantly better.
Okay.
It's an actual functioning building.
Okay.
They're still feeding and watering us. They still have that whole setup. This is a policy I like, where they'll have people in the industry who've kind of made it, but they don't have a professional row, which a lot of cons do, where it's like, oh, the really big names are all in one spot.
Right.
They intersperse them with everybody else, which gets traffic to us.
Okay.
It's a really good policy. I think it's something a lot of cons should do. They also don't do guests, which can work at cons, but it can also be kind of awkward.
Right. Sure, sure. Yeah, that's the trade-off of, when you look at something like Space, for an example, versus Wizard World.
Right.
Yeah, you know, it's a trade-off. Sometimes those big names bring in lots of people, and sometimes those lots of people that come up totally ignore you in Artist Alley.
Yeah.
You know, it's a trade-off, and it's a crapshoot sometimes.
Yeah. The other big thing for me with Three Rivers Comic Con was I shared a table with somebody, which I hadn't done since I moved here.
Okay.
I shared it with a cartoonist named Kelsey Crawford. They are a fantastic cartoonist based out of Eastern Ohio.
Okay.
It's funny because they've been doing what I've been trying to get going for a couple years longer than me. So I keep going to them for advice and stuff.
What is it that you're trying to get started?
Just being a more stable freelancer.
Okay.
Because that's a tough thing to do.
Sure.
But they're doing very well with that. They've got a good con game down. We met because we were doing a lot of the same cons last year, including the weird ones. There was this one con called Put and Play Con, which happened up in Put-in Bay, Ohio, which was its first year. They didn't really have their act together. I'm not sure if it's happening again, but it was kind of a train wreck of a con. I say that with love. We had a great time, but there were some serious problems. Nobody really made money. Out of the 20 tablers that were there, Kelsey and I were next to each other, and we kept running into each other at previous cons. So it's just like, are you following me?
Yeah.
So we finally ended up tabling together.
All right, Ben. Well, you're also going to be at a newer convention here next weekend, Tiny Papers.
That's right.
Which is happening in Gahanna. It's 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. It's over there on Mill Street. June 22nd. Are you excited to be part of this?
I am excited. It's been a while since I've done a zine fest.
Uh-huh.
I did them a lot more when I was in school in New England because they have a ton of zine fests there.
Okay.
And I haven't really seen that many out here that didn't require a lot of travel. And that's always tough with zine fests because they tend to be... I often don't do as well at them, but they tend to be cheaper, so it doesn't really matter. And this is a local one. Gahanna's 10 minutes from me.
Right.
I can't not do it. I'm also excited because it's an outdoor con, which I've never done before. And I've been a little terrified about what to do with all my paper stuff with an outdoor con, but I'll figure it out.
And, yeah, sure.
You know, it's all part of a learning experience.
There you go.
One of the other big things about it is they've had a very good social media presence,
mm-hmm.
which for a lot of cons is rare, for ZineFest particularly so,
mm-hmm.
just because they tend to be very DIY, very much the indie punk rock style of things.
Yes.
And I've been really impressed because I constantly am getting, I've been friended by the main administrator on multiple platforms. They keep referencing me in their
mm-hmm.
advertising. Like, it's really good policy.
Yeah, yeah. What other places are you going to be?
Let's see. Next big con is Otakon, which okay. is in DC. After that, I'm doing PsychoCon. I haven't officially told them this yet, now that I think about it, but I will not be there Friday. I'll be there Saturday and Sunday.
Okay.
I've checked a bit with them to make sure it's okay, but I haven't officially told them yet.
Okay.
But
where's that one at?
That one is in Whitehaven, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
And then MatsuriCon, which is right here in Columbus,
mm-hmm.
one of the other big anime conventions. I'm hoping to do a panel there. A couple panels, actually.
Cool, man. Yeah.
Helping out Trixie with her mm-hmm. dance panels. She does ballroom dance stuff and then runs formal balls for cosplayers
mm-hmm.
at these events. And I should be helping her with that. She and I were actually in the ballroom dance club when we were at Canyon. So that's how we originally met.
Right.
So I still help her with that stuff.
Gotcha.
When she's running it. And I'm also hoping to do a panel on writing mystery comics, because MatsuriCon's theme this year is mystery.
Oh, okay.
Which is why I was like, you need to give me a table. I'm on brand. but the proposals, they just closed the proposal process, so mm-hmm. we'll be waiting to hear back. But I'm hopeful. Like, it sounds like something that I'm betting they're going to want to.
And doing panels is fun. I don't know if you've ever done one before, or did you say this is your first go-round of panels?
I've done a couple.
Okay.
When I was in Vermont, mm-hmm. there's an organization called the Vermont Comic Creators Group,
mm-hmm.
which would, one of the big things they do is they'd have a table at most cons in Vermont and a lot of New England,
mm-hmm.
where their creators could just have some of their stuff. So it's a big group table.
Mm-hmm.
But they'd also try to arrange panels, and anyone who was in the group could be part of the panel. And I did a couple that way.
Okay.
And one of the big things I learned is when you panel, people stop at your table afterwards and buy stuff. Which is
go.
A really great reason to do it. Actually, the very first panel I did, there was this tiny little con called RaptorCon. This was some of the most fun I had in a con at that time. This was when I was still in Vermont. I came across it last minute because they didn't have... their website was a little weak and things like that. And I just happened to come across it and I realized that it was happening the next day.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, there's a con in the area and we had no idea about it. We were a comic school. Like, it's 45 minutes from us. We should have somehow known. So I emailed one of the guys the contact email address, which mm-hmm. to their credit, they had. Like, you wouldn't believe how many websites for cons don't have that stuff.
I have a story, but that's another time.
But I emailed them saying, hey... You know, I know it's probably too late for this year, but is there an email list or anything I can get on for next year? I get a response within like 15 minutes. And the guy says, we still have tables. You want tables? How many tables you want? And the deal was going to be, I think it was one table for 30, two tables for 40, and three tables for 50, which is nothing.
Yeah.
And I just said, I was at a cartoon school. So I sent out emails to everybody. I was like, hey, who wants to split tables?
Yeah.
And I got five people to go. We bought three tables. And
nice.
Here's what it turns out this con was. It was the first time this con had ever happened. It was mm-hmm. at a high school.
Okay.
A high school senior had put together the entire con himself in 6 months.
Huh.
So this is why I had problems with the website. Because he's a high school senior who put this together very quickly. Like,
yeah.
This is perfect for, like, it was actually better run than some of the cons run by adults I'd been to. But the panel thing was very funny because they had one panel and it was just an all creators panel.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, the panel's going to happen at this time because this kid knew that there were panels at cons. And so pretty much, it was very slow, but it was fine. We made back our money. We could cost us about 10 bucks each. It's no problem.
Yeah.
They said, yeah, you know, close your tables. We'll make sure none of your stuff gets stolen. Anyone who wants to can go
mm-hmm.
and be part of this panel. So there's a huge group of us sitting up there and the panel time passes and, you know, there's a small audience and we're sitting there and looking around and we realize are we supposed to be running this panel too? That they didn't tell us about? And like right as we're asking that question, a teacher runs in. And he says, sorry. They just now told me I'm doing this. And it was great. That was my first panel.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's wrap up here. We're getting up to about 45 minutes in that. So all your social media and your website, BWH Comics.
That's right.
Again, talked about the branding there. Website, of course, is bwhcomics.com.
That's right.
And that's probably the best place to go to get all the information
you. That's where you go to get absolutely everything. Okay. It's all routed through there. Patreon is the other place where you can get lots of information about my stuff. That's just patreon.com/bwhcomics. And if you want to go directly to some of my big projects, you can get to Cospain at cospaincomic.com.
Okay.
And Letters of the Devil at lotd-comic.com. You can also get to them through bwhcomics.com. Sure, yeah. Those are the direct URLs.
There you go. Ben, any other upcoming projects besides Letters 2 that you've been working on that you want to talk about?
Ooh, quick? Upcoming projects. That's tough because I'm doing two huge long-term projects at the same time, which I don't necessarily recommend. I will say once I finish this book, my current plan is to either take a complete break from letters for a little while. I kind of want to do more books, but I need a break.
Sure.
Or possibly do a short story format that can later be collected.
Okay.
So I can just break it up into smaller stuff and not have an entire book while I'm running a webcomic. Besides that, I've got a lot of horror comics in the back burners. I have a Dungeons & Dragons stream that I really want to get started at some point. I've been playing with doing a horror short story book in the style of Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, which is, we'll see.
Okay.
Are you familiar with that book?
I'm familiar with that book.
Are you familiar with the old artwork?
Man, it's been ages since I've taken a look at one of those.
So, the original illustrator was a guy named Stephen Gamel, who made absolutely terrifying artwork. It was very drippy and creepy, and this is what I grew up with.
Okay.
There are a lot of jokes that had traumatized an entire generation. And because it was so scary, they changed artists at one point. Like, they actually redid it all with tamer art. And a lot of people got really mad because it's amazing horror art. There's a movie, I believe Guillermo del Toro is making it, that's coming out where they take a bunch of the images and stories from that and are making a horror film.
Really?
Yeah.
I probably saw the revamped versions because I don't remember the art being that scary.
Yeah.
So I'll have to look that up, man, and take a look at that.
It's incredible. The guy's name is Stephen with a PH, Gamel, GAMMELL.
Okay.
I remember that because I've been looking up his stuff because I've been figuring out how he did it.
Okay.
And I've been messing around with... He used graphite wash, which is just graphite powder and a brush.
Really?
Yeah. It's really messy and a pain, but I've been having fun with it. And so what I've been doing, because Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark is all... It's all folk tales and urban legends. Like the author, Alvin Schwartz, did a lot of research, and he credits everything. He's not stealing.
Okay. But
he's just, it has this famous story of the hook on the door handle.
Yes, and, yes, you know,
finding this weird looking dog and it turns out it's a rat with rabies and stuff like that. So it's all these classic stories. And I've been doing these random scary illustrations and I keep getting ideas for new stories that I'm writing along with them. And I've honestly only been doing this about a week, but it's been so much fun that I'm really thinking I might make this a project.
Well, man, you got a lot on your plate there.
Yes.
And
I got to sleep eventually.
That's true. Well, Ben, thanks, man, for stopping by. I appreciate it, man.
Thank you for having me.
You're quite welcome, man. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up the episode.
There you have it, folks. My conversation with Mr. Ben Wright Human. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you liked it. And feel free to let me know if you did. And you can do that a couple different ways. You can find me on Twitter at PVDMVP. You could shoot me an email, johnorlando@pvdcast.com. Or you can leave me a message over on the Facebook page. That, of course, being facebook.com/PVDcast. And don't forget, this podcast is available a variety of different places. It's available at pvdcast.com, the online home of yours truly, as well as through iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Spotify, Google Play, Pod Paradise, SoundCloud, Libsyn Podcast Player, the Echo Network, basically anywhere where you get podcasts at. All you gotta do is search for the PVDcast. Sometimes you have to put in my name, PVDcast John Orlando, and then you will be able to experience the PVDcast in all of its greatness. And with that, I do want to remind you one more time that we have another great sponsor for this episode, and that, of course, is Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/PVDcast. Audible has over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. And for you, the listeners of the PVDcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the chance to check out their service. So to download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/PVDcast. And once again, that address is audibletrial.com/PVDcast. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get on out of here. I thank you for listening. I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous and stay independent.